what more is there to it? Well, how do we put tanks and buckets and things in here? Pumps can be current generators. They appear on the right-hand side. But buckets, and also what about other sorts of valves, things with non-linear behaviour? For instance, at the pool here, there's a great big bucket, which small children or even large ones can stand underneath, and water pours into it until such point as a trapdoor in the bottom opens and all the water comes rushing out all in one go. And that is not a static linear behaviour. There's quite a lot of chaos going on there, because when the door opens very slightly, the water starts to flow and then something like that. So how can we model all these more exotic components in this structure? Here's another non-linear component that we'll commonly come across. I expect we've seen these. If you have a natural gas feed into your house, then you have one of these on the top of the gas meter. If you have a gas barbecue, you have one of these on the top of your gas cylinder. If you're a scuba diver, you have one of these behind your head, regulating the pressure coming into your mask. And this has an input pipe and an output pipe. It has a characteristic behavior, input pressure versus output pressure. And a pressure regulator valve is designed to work like this, that as we increase the input pressure, once it gets to the nominal value, the output pressure doesn't go up any higher. For scuba diving, there's liquid oxygen on one side and there's your face on the other side, and you don't want the liquid oxygen to come straight through into your mouth. You want it to just come through at something like atmospheric pressure. In fact, if you've been scuba diving, you'll know this is adjustable, and as you go a bit deeper in the water, you have to push this up a bit so that the air goes into you when you're at slightly deeper depth. But that's a sort of very typical sort of component. How can we model that in our flow equations? And also tanks. Well, in electronics, the most common and most simple non-linear component is the diode. The electric diode conducts electricity in one direction and not the other. It's not a perfect switch. It has a voltage versus current waveform transfer characteristic, like this heavy black line here. In fact, it's an almost perfect exponential curve. And the shape of that curve was worked out by Mr. Shockley, and it's given by this formula here, that the voltage across the diode and the current in the diode are related by this exponent, where IS is some global property of silicon, about 10 to the minus 12, and VT is something like, I forget what it is, Boltzmann's constant times the ambient temperature times the charge on electron or something like that. But anyway, this curve follows very closely for all silicon diodes, and it has the property that when the voltage is negative, no current flows to speak of, and as we try and make the voltage positive, then the current goes up very rapidly and it will not tolerate a high positive voltage. It will melt rather than let you have more than about 0.8 of a volt across there. So if we wire a diode like that into a little circuit, we have a battery, a resistor and a diode. The operating point of this circuit, by which I mean the voltage and the current, all the flows in here, are given by the simultaneous equations where every component is happy. And you may know that the resistor has a VI curve, which is a straight line proportional to the gradient of the resistor. And because it's connected onto the back of a battery, it actually will intersect the Y-axis up here at the battery voltage and so on. But details don't really matter. The point is that this is a highly nonlinear component. It's definitely not a straight line. It's a very bendy line. So how can we put nonlinear components into our conductance matrix? What we can do is we can rewrite that diode. So that's the same circuit on the previous slide. It's got a bit larger on the, but we've changed the diode to a current generator and a resistor. And we know how to model current generators and we know how to model resistors. So if we can find an equivalent current generator and resistor that are a bit like the diode, then we can pop those in and solve the flow equations for that instead. And in actual fact, this works very well. The resistance that we'll need to put in there is essentially the gradient of the VI curve at the point of the current operating point. And the current that we need to put in there is going to be a current which is going to be the extrapolation of that tangent right the way back down to where this crosses the current axis. And if we put those two things in instead, the rest of the circuit won't know the difference as to whether we've got a diode there or a current generator and a resistor connected together. And so that's the technique that we use. How do we work out the values of those? Well, we can, since we have the analytic formula for the diode as given by Mr. Shockley, we can just differentiate it and get its gradient, di by dv, which comes out to that. You can plug in some numbers and get a value. And the current is just going to be given by the diode voltage times that conductance. So it's a piece of cake, in actual fact, to come up with these two formulae. They just pop out straight away. The question is, how do we choose this value VD? VD appears on the right-hand side of both of them. And the answer is, there's no good way of getting it, but what we can do is we can iterate the... If all the nonlinear components in the system are playing this game, then we can... If we've got the VDs correct for each one, then when we iterate, we will, when we solve the system of simultaneous equations, it will give us the voltages on all these nodes. And if we have them correct, they'll be the values that we just chose. So the whole problem of finding the flows between nonlinear components is a matter of trying and seeing and iterating until we get a better solution which simultaneously satisfies all of these equations. So now we're solving simultaneous nonlinear equations, but we're going to do it by iterating linear approximations. Actually, in actual fact, we can use some really sophisticated iterations for this. For instance, the Newton-Raphson iteration can be used because not only is this analytic, we can easily differentiate it and get the first derivative and plug it in and turn the whole thing into a Newton-Raphson formula. But doing that's going to be a bit too complicated for us. In this example, we started off with a battery and a resistance of the battery, another resistor and a diode. We replaced the left-hand side. We can't do batteries. We replaced it with a current generator and a resistor. That's a Norton equivalent. And then we can't do diodes either, so we replaced the right-hand side by a resistor and a current generator. And then we have an equation which is all linear, a system which is all linear components. We have the formula for each of these, and we can write down the conductance matrix for this circuit multiplied by the two nodal voltages equals the two current generators, like that. And then we can solve that. But V1 and V2 will come out, and V1 and V2 have to be plugged, well, V2 is VD, so VD has to be plugged back in to this equation to give us a new value of GD, and then that's the iteration that we're going to do. So it's a little bit tricky to do the nonlinear components, but perfectly doable if you stare at this a little bit. The time-varying components, the tanks, turn out to be really quite a bit easier. This is the output from running the demo associated with that. If we have this circuit, again a very simple circuit, which is a capacitor connected to a resistor or a single tank charged to some initial depth and a pipe, then the equations of motion for this are dd by dt equals minus f over a. F is the flow out of the pipe, and the flow is going to be given by the density of the water times g, the mass to force conversion for the water, divided by, using our linear approximation for pipes, some constant of resistivity per unit length of the pipe times the length of the pipe. And so this is going to have an exponential decay. How do we put the capacitors in our matrix form? Well, we can get, again, the instantaneous gradient of the voltage with respect to time. It's just I over C. The second equation is the equation of the resistor. And we just need to simultaneously solve these to get the instantaneous behavior. So this is what it looks like in detail. Oh, this is the rearrangement I was just looking for. We have replaced now our capacitor with a current generator and a resistance in parallel with it. The dV by dI is given by delta T over C, if you follow that through, and V over I is essentially the resistance, so the reciprocal of that is going to be the conductance, C over delta T. And so it's easy enough to work out what resistance we should put there. The current that we need to put there is going to be the current which would give the voltage, which is, or the depth, which is currently in the capacitor. And that is going to be a simulation state variable, because the thing about capacitors, see, diodes and valves and things, we assume they're memoryless, they don't contain any information from one time step to another, whereas things like tanks or velocities of masses and that sort of thing, they have inertia, and they only vary their state variable slightly in each time step, as we've seen before. So here we're just using a forward stencil to get the new voltage on the capacitor at the time t plus delta t is simply the voltage currently on the capacitor plus the current flowing into it, which in fact I is coming out, so it's a minus sign there, times the time step over the capacitance. So this also works out to be pretty trivial to do. And if we do that in some flow equations, then so here's another example circuit, a battery, a resistor, off of the battery, another resistor, and a capacitor. We'll first of all do the Norton equivalent on the battery to convert it into a flow generator and a shunt resistor of the same value. Then we will do a linearization operation on the capacitor. We're going to replace that with the current generator and that value there. And then the matrix equation, flow equations for this have two voltages, V1 and V2. And there's no iteration required to solve this one. What we will do is we will solve it and instantly get the voltages on the various points. But then, for the next time step of the simulation as a whole, we need to update the voltage on the capacitor. So, how can we mechanize all of that? If we run that one, it produces that, but I'm not going to go into that. So what we can do is we can have a generic framework for supporting a simulation of all sorts of components connected up as a network, and we'll have various functions that we can use to install components in our framework. So this is our water network, which we started off the lecture with, and we're going to install the five pipes using this add resistor term, and these are the nodes. So the first pipe goes between node 0 and node 1. The second pipe goes between node 1 and node 2. These two pipes go between a node and the reference plane. So we put minus 1 in there. And then we can install more fancy components like our buckets. And again, we have to give them the nodes they're connected to. These two are connected to node 0 and the reference plane, and node 2 and the reference plane, respectively. And then we have a simulation loop for the whole thing, which actually consists of two nested loops. The outer one is iterating the time steps and advancing the global time by adding on delta t each time. The inner one is going to be needed if we have any nonlinear components in our system. And we need to... each of our nonlinear components, when we invoke its code, is going to return a Boolean to say whether it's happy or not. And if all of them return converged, then we exit out of this inner loop and go on and do the outer loop for the next time round. So all of the code for this is in that folder. It's not very much longer than what's on the slide. So it's about 3 screenfuls, including all the plotting and everything. And then secondly, there are some flow network stencils here. That's the one for installing a resistor. And you'll see that it adds the conductances onto the leading diagonals and subtracts them from the opposite corners. And then there's also in here a tank and a diode model, which are incredibly simple as well. So this is the tank or capacitor one. All we do is evaluate a couple of those equations that were on the slide, and this one always converges, so it returns true. And then we have the forward difference operator here. We measure our voltage by reading off the voltage on the two terminals we're connected to, and that becomes our new state variable for the next time step. So the whole thing is about 5 screenfuls. And if you remember what happened when we ran the first one, this one hopefully is going to produce the same sort of output, because it's a simulation of the same thing. Actually, it's an extra plot. I'm plotting the voltage on, or the potential, a third node as well in the plot routine. And we didn't have to. We could very easily modify our network by just changing the components that we install at the outset, rather than having to manually solve lots of simultaneous equations again and again. So this bit in the middle here is where they're all installed. So that, in a nutshell, is how we simulate large networks of components. We take a linear solver and we substitute in nonlinear nonlinear components with linear equivalents thereof, which can be solved. This is the capacitor bit I was just showing you in larger font. How do we choose our time step? So overall, we have a pair of nested loops. And if we have nonlinear components, then we're going to have to iterate until they're all essentially happy with each other, that they've got the correct flows through them. And then once they're happy, then we can advance delta time and move forward, and that will update the time-varying components, such as the capacitors and water tanks. If we have a large delta T, then, again, our linear approximation is going to suffer. Because we need to use a more sophisticated iteration technique overall, like one of gears or something. On the other hand, if it's too small, then we're just going to get simulation performance that's too low. And so, as always, it's best to have a flexible solution, and what's used is the adaptive time step algorithm, which is on the bottom here. So what this says is we'll count the number of iterations we did in the current time step until all of the nonlinear components were happy with each other. If there were none of those, that will be instant anyway, but generally speaking, we have valves and trapdoors and things, and diodes. And if that number came out to be twice our nominal maximum, then actually we've probably gone too far forward in the previous time step. So what we do is we undo the previous time step and we halve our time step and have another go. But if it's only just above our maximum preferred number, then our time step is probably a bit too big. Things have changed too much, and so we're taking too long to iterate to get the new stable operating point in the current time step. So we'll just back off the time step slightly, and contrary-wise, if the iteration is smaller than some n min, so n max might be 30 and n min might be 5 or something like that, if we've gone the other way, then we'll increase our time step a bit, and that will help speed up the overall performance of the simulation.